Good evening, everybody,
Hello.
and welcome to our semi-regular Monday stream.
Yes.
Today is a very special day, because our stream happens to fall on October 7th, which is quite fortuitous what we're talking about right now. But before we get to that too much, we will do our regular intros. I don't know, if you ever have trouble with getting one of our videos live, we do always start on time, so
Yes.
do refresh. I don't know, should we get the weather out of the way first of all?
The weather's crap, basically non-existent, and we should all hail the monocloud until it disappears.
All hail the monocloud.
If people wish to support what we do here, and not just in terms of giving weather reports, as much as that seems to be some people's bag, you can donate directly through the Ko-fi, which has been linked in the chat. Super chats, or you can subscribe to the Substack, where you get this stream as a separate broadcast with no adverts that you can download
I've
if YouTube Premium is not your bag and you don't
yes,
want to be a member
I've
of the
been trying to
channel.
get that working. The back end on Substack has been quite unreliable for podcasts recently, and I'm not quite sure why. It might just be I've actually put a ticket in. We've not been updating these as much as we have done in the past, but you will get a glut of these at some point because I'm having some technical issues with the back end of Substack that might be related to my account, so I'm not quite sure. But
Oh
there
God,
should yeah.
well, I was gonna say, I hope that's not also on my end. I might have to have a look at that. But anyway, we've got quite a busy stream this evening, so we shan't dilly-dally for too long, and we'll make sure to shill stuff out again at the end. But
Yeah.
I reckon we should kind of just hit the ground running here.
Oh, we should do before I say that. Like you said, we're still fully monetized on YouTube. So if you want to send us super chats, super stickers, or become a member, that is also available because we are still monetized somehow.
And of course, on this evening stream, we will be talking about Israel, our favourite place on the planet.
Yes, our favorite place, of course, the nation of Israel.
Bibi Netanyahu, please can I have dual citizenship and please can I emigrate? I wish to see the diverse and beautiful beaches of Tel Aviv.
Yes, I might just do like a super cut of some of these speeches that have been coming out recently because one, they tend to get copyright struck in multiple ways.
Yes.
So the silliness that you may be expecting will not be here is in very large amounts, but we're still very silly generally. We're very silly
Oh,
people.
I'm deeply serious about my
Yes.
love for
Well,
Israel. I would never joke about that.
we're deeply serious about our love for Israel, but we're otherwise slightly silly. But some of the, I will say, more comedy bits we'll be leaving from the time. We've got quite a lot to talk about, like I said.
Yes.
Anyway, shall we quickly get into it?
Well, of course, for those uninitiated or those unaware, today is the anniversary of the October 7 attacks on some concert and whatever else happened on in Israel. And we're not going to talk about the specifics of the events of that day because much like the specifics of, say, for example, certain buildings that burned down that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, engaging with the specifics is where we get in trouble. And irrespective of what we think or know about these events, what we are ultimately interested in is the narrative.
It's the narrative and the effect, and ultimately how this filters down to affect you. We
Yes.
try not to bring geopolitics to you. We try and make you understand how some of the things you're experiencing are influenced by geopolitical forces in quotes, but really we'll see a lot of domestic push here. There's a lot of grand narrative for quite boring, standard, and selfish reasons in politics, as we tend to do, as we unconspiracy jacket this massive tangled web. I don't know. Before we start, I'm actually relatively happy in the way we're going to tackle this. It's mostly just using official sources in quotes, as we usually do. But I think the combination of things juxtaposed in itself becomes incredibly telling.
Yes.
But we'll get to it. I had to use this image for the thumbnail. This is from the Gazette. Lamy, October 7th anniversary is day of deep reflection and pain. There's a lot of. We're not going to go over all of these because everybody's got an October 7th anniversary piece that's come out today.
Yes.
But I just. That image, it's almost like a hip hop album cover.
What do you? Yes, it's there's got to be a snappy name in there that I wish I'd worked out before. Nah, it's not coming. It's not coming. Lammy and the Lehman Bros.
Lammy and the Lehman Bros. David Lammy said the anniversary of the October 7th attack on Israel was a moment of deep reflection and pain, as commemorations were held across the UK to mark the outbreak of the latest Middle East conflict. Visiting the South Tottenham Synagogue in his own parliamentary constituency on Monday, the Foreign Secretary paid tribute to the Jewish community across the country. Let the rabbis meet their golem.
Yes, but we've got all the usual crowd come out for this. Well, you've got Big Douglas Murray. They've put up Hamas rape tunnel posters on the anniversary. How disgusting!
No. He's praising it.
Oh, sorry.
No. It is weird. It's very strange behaviour. But he's saying activists put anti-Hamas rape tunnel posters in London Tube Station, October 7th anniversary, Evening Standard. Excellent idea.
So wait, are the anti-Hamas rape tunnels?
Yes.
Or the anti-Hamas rape tunnel? What sort of activism are they engaging in here? I can't tell.
What kind of activism are they engaging in? Yes, this is from The Standard. And apparently we're getting Hamas rape tunnels of Gaza, which does seem like strange mixed messaging.
But is it surely somewhere at the bottom of this article, there's somewhere there's like copped up to this, surely?
There is some kind of... who is the Jewish pressure group here? It should say on here somewhere. But I can't remember who copped to it, but it is basically, I looked at it and they're not important. There's some nowhere charity that seems to be used for stunts like this.
Mm.
So it is a group, an activist group that seemed to come out of nowhere that nobody seems to belong to or like, but seems to get in the news anyway.
Well, of course, no one needs to get to the bottom of what happened in Southport a couple of months ago. What we actually need is the UK government to expend every element of political capital to save
the group is just called London Against Hamas, and they're basically some Tim Pot NIMBY looking group who just do stunts on behalf of larger power centres.
But a fundamental element of sort of all of this, as we look at another example of it here, is that as soon as these events happened, and even really before that, as we sort of talked about with our Quantum Small Hat stream, and even furthermore in our woke in a post-woke world, the framing for this and the sort of poisoning for the well and this almost sort of the anticipation for an event like this to happen has been set for some senses years, really, almost.
For a very long time. This has been, as we've talked about in the containment arc, when we talk about the Henry Jackson Society, and many of the alums of the containment arc will come up in this, because the two are inextricably linked together. But really, this has been the pro-war neocon faction licking their wounds since really about 2005. This is an arc almost 20 years in the return, in that around about 2005 to 2006, especially into 2008, people got extremely sick of the war on terror, and things had to, you know, change tack. But really what we have is the return of a war on terror. Standing is Barry Weiss talking about that the past year has revealed the enemies of civilization, but also its great defenders, including Douglas Murray and basically just her friends.
She's got this wrong, because Gad Saad isn't on there. Oh, he's a great defender of Western civilization.
Yeah, yeah. Where's Saad Gad?
Because, of course, Israel is that fundamental keystone of Western civilization, despite not really being a Western civilization or being really in the West.
No, not at all.
But this carries on. I don't know if you want to chuck the slide up your...
I will say yes. This does double duty here, in that a lot of the time when people talk about Israel and, I guess, the wider lobby, they're accused of poisoning the well. But what we've seen here narratively is a giant act of effectively poisoning the well when it comes to, one, the previous political paradigm, which no longer applies, and two, in terms of any proper outward discussion of many different topics.
Yes.
This narrative has swamped so many different topics.
It's become the acid within which so many of them seem to dissolve down into.
Yes.
And fundamentally, for me, and one of the... it's not specifically the point we've got in front of us here, but it is one of the ones we're going to come into. I look at what's happened over the last year or so, and all I see is nothing but a conscious and concerned effort to create a narrative around Jewish people.
Yes.
And the reactions that other peoples have to Jewish peoples. And then attempting to make this become a value-laden debate against certain factions when it's convenient to group these people into groups that actually don't really make any sense on the face of them.
No.
You know, you can't really be a LGBTQ-loving, Nazi, pro-Palestinian, anti-imperial. You know, these things just don't work.
No.
And we are constantly told that these things are contradictions. But for the sake of making this narrative work, we're now told that these things are all synonymous with one another.
Well, the story I have up on screen, and it's a bit of a dig, a bit of a joke, but it's a story from Hertz, which is basically that the fact that in 1948, there is proof of something called Operation Cast Thy Bread, which was quite literally the IDF and the original founder of Israel, the great Israeli hero, Benjamin Zaykada. Yes, Israel Prize Laureate. There's many, many, many different people who were involved in this.
Yeah.
And it turns out that, yes, testimonies that in 1948, the IDF to poison wells in Acre and Gaza by adding bacteria to the drinking water. The smoking gun has been revealed. The newly unearthed documents show that the operation was much broader in scope than earlier believed, and other top military and political figures besides Ben Gurion, who was the basically Israeli yes. founding hero, were involved. So if you ever get accused of quote-unquote poisoning the well...
On the subject of Israel.
Yeah, on the subject of Israel, remind them who poisoned the well first.
Oh, yes, but that was literal well poisoning. That's different.
Yes, we're talking about rhetorical well poisoning.
But yes, I think one of the fundamental points that really needs to be looked back on throughout this period, and I don't think it's really over yet either, is that this event, particularly October 7th, has become a sort of polarizing moment for what are fundamentally Jewish ethnic in-groups operating in the anti-woke sphere, having their chance to pivot out into the wider world and no longer just be seen as a tired old group of Jews punching low-hanging fruit.
What's happened really is that this has become the headline example conflict that we live in the post-woke world.
Yes.
If you look pre-October 7th, it looked like Netanyahu's star was falling. There were large-scale protests against a judicial reform, which really just got superseded by the fact that they are now a war government,
yeah.
Which means that they have much more power than they would do even with the judicial fiddling, which is why it was dropped. But previous to this, you had a movement that was trying to dislodge the current Israeli, nominally nationalist, in quotes, government. But here you have a report from PBS talking about how Israel's judicial reform protests shifted focus to aiding victims of Hamas. What they were able to do was, as the conflict began, they were able to absorb all of their pieces of kind of civil strife and activism and turn them towards the effort.
All the different little Jewish factions bickering over who gets to control Israel all decided that actually it's the people outside Israel that are the problem. We need to come together in the name of a greater Israel.
But this is how any woke concerns, in quotes, have the knees cut off them by practical reality.
It's like their version of like bulldog nationalism almost to a certain extent.
Here's the National Post. Jesse Klein, how woke progressivism drove a surge in anti-Semitism in the West. It's another good example that this is a post-woke conflict.
There's
another aspect of this as well is that we have mass protest as routine. There's a Reuters article here.
Before we get on to specifically just the protest subject, I think it's also worth mentioning that sort of previous headline you had there. Something, again, we talked about in the Quantum Small Hat stream.
Yes.
That if you have a system of political analysis that looks towards power, and more specifically, organised power as the imperial force in whatever sort of polity or body politics or whatever, eventually at some point people are going to start noticing that these organised groups tend to organise around Judaism.
Yes.
Or Jewish ethnic, you know,
group, yes.
Whatever it is in relation to them. So it's sort of the perfect kind of get-out mechanism. Well, we believed in these progressive ideas, but these radicals and student bodies have gone too far, and they've gone into the realms of conspiracy theories and anti-Semitism because they're using critical theory not to look at the white Anglo world, but at the Jewish world.
Thank you for the £2 there, though. D's bit of rough. These days I understand Hadrian's rage. Ubu. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. But yes, we have this narrative juxtaposition of the idea that Israel and the wider Israeli conflict is anti-woke.
Yes, and I'm actually surprised. Maybe I don't fully appreciate the scope of the arrest that happened during some of the protests. I think that would have been towards the start of this year. Remember, we had all those big American university protests and all these students coming out. We had all the online commentators come out and say, you wouldn't want to be like one of these smelly, liberal, communist, hippie protesters that love Hamas. You've got to be with the patriots, those pro-Israeli patriots. And they spent so long trying to force that narrative on us and just having all these sort of Jewish actors painting themselves as the Chads while everyone else is painted as the Soyjaks. And I can see almost perfectly you could use that as a way to shut down all these little progressive lobbies inside universities that have been a pain in your arse for the last couple of years now that they're no longer useful. Oh, well, you were here to help black people and gay people and Chinese people and disabled people and whatever other race or group. But now you've stepped on the he who cannot be stepped on.
Yes.
Now your group gets shut down because you're not really for anti-discrimination anymore. You're an anti-Semite.
Well, it is the resolution of the quantum small hat paradox. People talk about this as quote unquote anti-woke, but it is, in a nominal sense, pro-classic civil rights.
Yes.
You have, as we'll see, come to later, we have a large amount of carve-outs for everybody. Everybody gets a carve-out. I just want to read this bit because it's Brandon O'Neill, who's a Spiked alum.
Oh,
And he
of
seems to
course.
find himself himself in the pages of the Canadian National Post here. So we have a Trotskyite, an avowed Trotskyite, who is a member of the Revolutionary Communist Party, being quoted by the Canadian National Post as a right-wing pro-Israeli commentator.
Yes.
But anyway.
The Jewish nation found itself subjected to the very butchery it was built to withstand. The state to which Jews fled to escape the pogroms was now besieged by a pogrom. It felt like the most grave of violations, both of the sanctuary of the Jews and of the pact humankind made in the aftermath of the last great war.
Never
Never again.
again,
writes British author and commentator Brendan O'Neill in his new book, After the Pogrom, 7th October, Israel and the Crisis of Civilization. And yet, that shining moral clarity never came. Too many had taken up the cause, not of the Jews, but of their persecutor. O'Neill believes that October 7th provided a moral test for Western civilization, and we, collective we, hand on heart, everyone, we failed it miserably. He rightly places much of the blame for this on modern progressive ideology, which is a complete bastardization of the values that liberals once held dear.
We're the real liberals. We are the real liberals
But
because
what if I'm.
we say never again.
What if they weren't judging Jews on the colour of their skin, but on the content of their character?
Well, the content of Arabs' wells. Anyway, thousands around the world protest Middle East war as October 7th anniversary nears. We have this permanent state of mass protest, and I will give, well, credit where credit is due in quotes as a backhanded thing, and say that yes, large amounts of people are turning out to these protests, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, and it is just as we keep banging on about the perfect illustration of the futility of peaceful protest if you
Yes.
don't have an actual ally in the power structure. Marching in the street with a sign continues to do nothing on a global scale. We have this kind of fatigue to it here in the UK. Thousands take part in pro-Palestinian march. This was last Saturday, and there were genuinely thousands of people there. There was the equivocation about it, but this has really stopped making as many headlines.
Yes.
This is buried in the news cycle rather than being at the top of it now. And yes, you get these impressive shows of numbers on the streets, but it doesn't do anything
Well,
because
no,
that
but it.
because that isn't they don't understand where power is vested, and they are doing what we describe as haggling with the boxcar door.
Well, I was going to say, what they do provide, though, is useful ammunition for people on either side of the sort of narrative here to become more intensified. Those who are sympathetic with the protesters get to sit there and debate about what sort of embargoes or restrictions should be put on Israel by the British government and the Foreign Office and blah, blah, blah. Well, at the same time, we've got your sort of usual suspects running around on Twitter and GB News going, well, if these were pro-British protests, everyone would get arrested, ignoring the fact that actually quite a few people have been arrested at these protests, especially the student ones in America.
Yes, the student protests in America are a great sign that they always had the ability to yank on the leash.
Yes, this fifth column that existed in so many American campuses was actually allowed to exist at the behest of these campuses until this fifth column threatened the safety of Jewish students and the Jewish community at large.
Well, here again we see the woke angle. Woke political college leaders set stage for pro-Hamas DC protest. Lawmaker, the nightmare scenario for them.
Yeah. What happened yesterday is not free speech. It's free hate. Republican Representative Carlos Jimenez says.
Yes, it's very, this is our hate speech. Mm. This is the quote-unquote limits of free speech on the right, or supposedly on the right. The limits of free speech end where the...
criticism of organised Jewry begins.
Yeah, basically, yes. But I won't read this because it's an old one, but this again, the Washington Examiner, who likes to put out a lot of red meat, a year after Hamas assault, again, this is from yesterday, anniversary coverage. The answer for hateful college protests.
Fuck them. God, there's some great bits in here, actually.
Yeah.
The anniversary of Hamas's barbaric attack on Israel provides a good opportunity for someone to launch a nationwide campus tour to insult college students. That'd be Christopher Ruffo, then. Well, not really to insult them, but to tell them the truth, which too many of them will consider to be derogatory. Sometimes the truth hurts. Okay, let's back up. How awful. What a fucking awful bit of writing.
That's like turning around the chair and turning your cat back. Shut up. Anyway.
What spurs these thoughts are two published articles in the past week. One here at the Washington Examiner and another one in the Atlantic. The first by John Hopkins University political science professor Benjamin Ginsberg is called Why So Many Students Hate Israel. The second, which predated the first but nonetheless partially answers it, is called The Elite College Students Who Can't Read Books, written by the magazine's assistant editor, Rose Horowitz. The Atlantic article details the experiences of veteran professors at top universities who say their students have trouble handling even half the reading the professors formerly assigned. Many students, she reports, no longer arrive at college, even at highly selective elite colleges, prepared to read books. So they're just going for a complete cop-out here, which is these people don't actually read, don't engage with the material. But I thought the fundamental problem with all these liberal American universities is that they were filling everyone's heads with liberal propaganda and commie propaganda that they were all absorbing so intensely. So which one is it?
Yeah.
Are these people blind, ignorant anti-Semites, or are they cautious, conscious-acting, Machiavellian communist geniuses? I mean, I suppose this is only a... sort of contradiction that James Lindsay himself could sort in his own mind.
Yes, it is. It's again, you have these people who are both a boogeyman, but also completely incompetent and infantilized.
But we don't have too many of the examples of this specifically, but I just wanted people to cast their minds back to when these protests were happening and who, and specifically what, was being said in regards to the nature of these protests, the people involved in them, and the people countering them. And the way in which a certain type of chauvinism, maybe even what you might describe as a certain type of sort of settler imperialism, you know, this is my land, you be getting off it now.
Yes.
Was sort of created around this sentiment so that you looked sympathetically on these brave American patriots that defended their Jewish students in arms.
Well, you also just get a lot of red meat here. What you get is campus protests, investigations hang over schools as new academic year begins. I don't want to go over too much of like the other coverage of the actual protests because they were just kind of tit-for-tat weirdness. There were some that were attacked. Most of them were broken up by police. What happened is that the protests were ended by various forms of hard and kind of medium hard power, as in people were threatened with expulsion. There's also a huge amount of the upshot of this is the huge amount of what they call Title VI civil rights investigations still going on. What happened is that anywhere that had a protest, the federal government investigated them for both being anti-Jewish and anti-Muslim. Yes. And decided most of them were actually both. and that further arbitration needs to happen. But yes, campus protests, investigations hang over schools as new academic year begins, dozens of discrimination complaints brought by conservatives and pro-Jewish groups after the October 7th attacks last year have spawned lengthy federal inquiries. Some worry could chill free speech on campus.
Well, this is just another one of these big tent sort of moments where we are lumped in with a group of people that we share no values with. Just like the TERF shit. You've got these women who believe in 95% feminism, but because they don't go along with the tranny stuff, they get lumped in with ours, and that's now meant to be our cause to fight. Here we have a subset of Jewish professors who believe in 95% of progressivism, but don't like that bit that allows them to maybe deconstruct their own Jewish identity or the legitimacy of the Israeli state, and therefore they go, well, we're on your side now, guys.
Well, what we have here, again, is a further arbitration. According to the department, only around a quarter of all investigations open since October 7th, including K-12 schools, involve anti-Muslim or anti-Palestinian incidents. But still, they still come out and say that the strategy, you know, is to repress, to make the message go away. You know, staff attorney at Palestine Legal, there's a tit for tat here in that you have both sides saying they're not allowed to speak. And really what it is that, yes, they come out and just say that the problem, this is just a problem in law generally, when they say that they kind of private enforcement scheme that people have more money, more networks, more or just any kind of power that are able to mobilize a process more than other people. So they're kind of copping out there.
And that sounds a bit anti-Semitic, what she's saying.
Yes,
it is. She's talking about groups of people with more money, with better networks, more power, who are just able to better mobilize a process. Wow.
But this, again, these massive amounts of civil rights investigations into, I believe, up to 60 different institutions come from the resolution of the quantum small hat paradox. In that civil rights on campus, and that's really what the woke era was just a rebranded extension of civil rights proper. The fallback position has come. We're now doing proper MLK civil rights, and that means a re-examination and a carve-out for especially those who are Jewish. Again, Jewish faculty at UCLA, it's called equal protection, folks. Today's High Court ruling reveals a shocking truth. Jewish students at UCLA were excluded from certain areas because they wouldn't denounce their faith. And it just goes on to show the brief here because, well, they won a case against the protesters at UCLA. But of course they did. Another one here, how pervasive is anti-Semitism on US campuses? A look at the language of the protest. The movement to press for an end to Israel's war on Gaza has now found itself overshadowed by its loudest voices. Here we have the equivocating, the left equivocating of, how do we square the Muslim versus, you know, Zionist circle? How do we, you know, square the Jewish interest versus Muslim interest circle? And you just kind of wring the hands weakly and defer to where the power is. And really, you can see how quickly these protests dissipate. They are no longer a force. They've not really disrupted very much. There's still a few kind of campus strikes going on by very few students. But really, all of the campus protests we've seen could have been stopped at any moment. The police can just, like, drag people off. There can just be mass arrests. Campuses can be shut. People can be threatened with expulsion. These protests can end. The media, especially the left media, will be full of hand-wringing about anti-Semitism. And this, again, is a great demonstration of what we said in that, quote-unquote, woke activists, leftist activists are a joke. They hold no power. They have no real ability to organize apart from an agitated by the power structure. And when they get out of line, they are brutally put back in their box and they obey orders. But we've got a lot to cover here.
But the point you were trying to make here is that fundamentally, unlike the 60s student protests, they were allowed to carry on against the Vietnam War for the sake of creating an illusion of balance.
Yes.
These were, when the time was right, clamped down upon because even the semblance of balance in this issue can't be allowed because it's one of the things we're not allowed to talk about. And for, I suppose, a brief intermission, we can...
Well, I want to say that the lead-in here really is that this is all sold to us as based Zionism.
Yes.
That the based Zionists and the based conservative Jews are going round and shutting down, finally, these campus protests. They're finally getting the SJWs out of the campus, guys. And you have people like Chris Rufo with his Mr. White Civil Rights, who believes that you should be just another minority in your own country. What he says here is that it's interesting to watch leaders of small countries accomplish what in the United States we are told is impossible. Bukele dismantling organized crime, fake. Orban stopping illegal migrants at the border, that's into EU wrangling.
Yes.
And Milei slashing the bureaucratic state, which is just a lie.
Netanyahu destroying his...
And Netanyahu destroying... What an odd list there. What an odd list of internationalist projects that you are told are based. The only one there that is arguably a government that is trying to act in a genuinely nativist way is Orban. And even then, there's quite a few issues with
about
the board.
Whether or not he's just allowed to do that because he's pivoting himself in some manner against Russia.
And there's Elon Musk going, yeah!
Woo!
Woo!
We love Jews! Yeah. Catherine Blakelock, the founder of the Brexit Party, quote-tweeting Tommy Robinson here.
Yes.
When a picture tells a thousand words, Israel is trying to protect the West while the rest tries to stop it. For anyone in doubt, I support Israel and Tommy Robinson. Sadly, it is some Jewish friends who do not seem to understand that Labour and the Democrats will not support them and are actively helping to fight against them. I see this woman reads Nathan Kofnass's Substack.
I see this woman watches Murdoch Murdoch.
Yes. But this is, of course, some woman who's a frequenter and frequent sort of face that gets retweeted all over the distant right sphere. I mean, we've got another one coming up from Mr. Andrew Gold next, who does the Heretics podcast and has Sargon on to talk about how wokeism is the most dangerous thing anyone
Fallen
could do.
Fallen BBC presenter, Heretics, oh!
I don't think most people realise what a brave move it has been for Tommy Robinson to come out as pro-Israel and pro-Jews. In doing so, he's lost countless followers. He's standing up for the West, for liberty, and for survival, as if we haven't all known for years.
Yeah, we've been over this relatively often.
He's Paul Marshall's son, Winston Marshall of Mumford and Sons at one point. He's having an interview here.
Dissident Dialogues.
Yes, which is your spiked crowd again.
Yes.
And your University of Kent alumni. But he was just posting about he's having a special podcast today with some woman called Natasha Hausdorff. Israel is turning tragedy into victory. The truth about the founding of state in 1948 and how Biden, Harris and the international community turned their back on the Jews.
Oh, are you going to cover the well poisoning too? Anyway.
Oh, yes, there was also this from one David Atherton.
Mr. David Atherton.
But the post below...
Yes, his shot. Only traitors help invaders. This is entirely true.
Chaser.
Mood. Anyway.
But these people are everywhere. I mean, if you spend any time on Twitter, and I like to think I do not spend an extensive amount of time on there, my feed, especially for the last 6 months, has been nothing but Israeli government operative accounts, because there's no other thing to call them really at a certain level, celebrating every successful military operation Israel has in the region, celebrating the death of every Hamas sort of leader or Hezbollah leader or whoever gets blown up on that weekend. And you almost can't escape it.
No,
I mean, I would basically have to block half of what exists on that website, which is now why I run around now calling it Zog with an X. And I think we all should. I think, well, honestly, we all should. Because it's become inundated with it to the degree that makes any suggestion about Russian hacking or anything like that an absolute fucking nonsense.
Oh, well, we also have another £2 here from Tranquility Base. It says, Greater Israel, a real project? Yeah, it's called America. Love your streams. Thank you very much. But
you want to go down a little angle here and remind people of... Well, just remind people.
Well, people have very short memories when it comes to thinking it's happening. A few days ago, or I guess a week ago now, really, we had the Iranian missiles fly at Israel arc, and people...
They're going to nuke each other!
World War III! And it didn't happen. There's not been any retaliatory strikes. They took, you know, they invaded southern Lebanon, which I'm going to get to in a sec, because people going, oh, it's happening when southern Lebanon's invaded by Israel. It's like... You know, there's the meme of Bear Grylls? Whereas, like, sun's going down, better drink my own piss. Mm. It's like, well, something's happening. Better invade southern Lebanon.
Yep.
thank you, Israel. But people have very short memories about the happenings in Israel. I don't have time to go over the entire, you know, Israeli conflict history here. But people don't remember that this is simply a repeat of events that took place in the 2000s, the 80s, the 70s, and back in the 40s. Here we go. Here's every time Israel has sent troops into Lebanon. They sent a few troops into Lebanon during the 1948 Arab-Israeli War, although it wasn't a major theatre. 1978 saw the first Israeli invasion of Lebanon. 1982 saw the second Israeli invasion of Lebanon, about which there is a film that we might watch at some point called Waltz with Bashir, which just features IDF people confessing to war crimes, basically. From that point on, southern Lebanon was occupied for 18 years until the year 2000. So the situation you see of troops in southern Lebanon existed for 18 years continuously until 2000, in which they withdrew, basically for headache reasons. It just didn't feel worth it in their estimation anymore. In 2006, that withdrawal led to the Israel-Hezbollah war, and in 2024, we now found ourselves with the third Israeli invasion of Lebanon. I can't seem to get over the fact that people don't understand that this is a long-running conflict. People treat it like it is their first rodeo. Whereas 2006, with the Israeli-Hezbollah war, all of this happened in 2006, almost to a T, in terms of the Lebanon situation. This happens almost continuously whenever something like this starts to happen, you know, in the region, in quotes. Whenever Israel gets restless, it invades southern Lebanon.
Mm.
It is just what it does. It seems to be the major lever it pulls during a conflict. So the idea that either of these events would lead to some kind of happening, in quotes, is ridiculous. People simply do not have the length of memory to do geopolitics properly, and it shows.
And if you went on and described to certain people, yes, also this.
Well, it's just the fact that people were just like, so you understand what one of the ballistic missiles that Iran fired looks like. Here's a part of one that landed.
I love the...
one, and it's not even the whole thing, and it... I don't know, it looks like a Half-Life screenshot.
I love in the full size of that image and the one below that they've got like the phone screenshot crap around it to make it look more real.
I had to edit out the shit there, but that's again, I will direct people to my Sea of Worry Substack post, which I wrote the first time Iran fired missiles at Israel and nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
I advise you to go over and read that on the Substack. I'll put that quickly actually in the chat here, because it's a little bit better on the page now. But yes, our standing bet is that nothing ever happens. And guess what? Nothing happened.
And nothing still happened.
Nothing's still happening.
But one thing that is happening is that fundamentally, this event has been used to pivot politics across the West. We could speak more specifically, I suppose, about the US stuff, which you kind of mentioned here and there. But for us, of course, we are much more interested in what this means for UK politics.
Oh, don't worry, we'll be hitting the US stuff at some point. I have a lot stored up for that. So some of you have seen the precursor stuff to that, and it might make people a little bit angry, but it'll be very fun. But, so that'll come up in due course, but yes. As you were saying, what this is doing is warping UK politics.
Mm.
It is creating a situation where UK politics, especially quote-unquote on the right, revolves around a extremely small group of people whose ethnic interests must be defended and arbitrated against the ethnic interests of a whole slew of different groups that have different relationships with them. And that really is where some of the biggest power of the managerial state comes from, where they come in and they are able to create this endless process of arbitration between these different ethnic and ethno-religious groups. Just to put it in context here, and just so we get figures straight, the Jewish population in the UK, even self-identified, is quite low. It is about 0.5% of England. It is mostly concentrated in London, and it is maybe, you know, it says 219,000 who identified through the religious question alone, of all people who identified as Jewish. So it seems that people religiously describe themselves as Jewish, whether they're practicing or not, but that's a different thing. I 16,000 were identified through the ethnic group alone, identified through both questions. But yes, the number is not significant in terms of voter base. It is not a big enough group, unlike UK Muslims, who are a far larger group, who run into the millions, into the tens of millions now, really. The Jewish group, in terms of its size, is very small.
But its effects, however, yes. And as that woman, rather anti-Semitically, I must admit, described the fact that these people sometimes just have more power and better networks and more money and a greater ability to manifest a process and mobilise.
Well, the thing still going in the background, and the thing that is, and I use the thing pejoratively here, that we see in the little insert image there, is the proposed Holocaust Memorial at Westminster, replacing a children's park.
I mean, how many planks are there? I presume a plank for every million?
6 million planks. Cameron defends Holocaust Memorial location as unapologetic national statement. As legislation gets its second launch reading, Baroness Deitch tables an amendment expressing regret at the location, cost and design, and she and others speak of security concerns. What this is about is the fact that we have this very large exception for Israel and what is the Jewish ethnic narrative within British politics. Its most visible symptom will be this Holocaust memorial, which has been, it's been rammed through. In fact, it was so in violation of planning laws, they had to pass a separate bill to make its construction legal. There is a specific bill in Parliament that was introduced to force this through because it failed all legal challenges. And this will probably, it'll be picked up by the current government. It's currently a little bit in limbo in the Lords, but this will be forced through. It's already passed the Commons, and it is a kind of a multi, it's a cross-party bill, and it'll also be now a multi-administration bill. So, yay for that. And yeah, here it is in all of its glory.
All of its sloppy, fakey eye glory.
One of the only, and a specifically protected green space, might I add, by the Thames. One of the few in central London will be despoiled by this.
So you got to walk through it as well, with the looks of it, to actually get from one end of here to the other.
Yeah? Ugh. Yeah, they make you walk through it. Yeah, of course you do. Well, how else would it work?
But, of course, one thing we discussed, I think not long after the original sort of October 7th event, when looking at some of the anti-woke stuff, was the October Declaration and the rather rapid establishment of the British Friends of Israel.
Well, the British Friends of Israel have existed for quite a long time. We've talked about Calvin Robinson being an alum of them, yeah.
Not quite in the form that it seems to exist
October
now, though.
The October Declaration was something that turbocharged the British Friends of Israel, which is very, very closely related to the Conservative Friends of Israel.
And also the Free Speech Union.
And the Free Speech Union, yes. But the British Friends of Israel now hold... One, that's awful. That flag is just kind of...
Hey, I'm sure David Atherton would love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Mood?
We've talked about this previously, but it's basically a who's who of people who want to signal themselves.
Michael Gove, Rod Liddell, Daniel Finkelstein, Sir Richard Dearlove, Baroness Kate
Liz Howie, Truss,
Liz Truss,
Ian Duncan Smith,
Nimco Ali, Boris Johnson, Sir Ian Duncan Smith, yeah. Tom Holland, Ben
Graham Linehan,
Matthew D'Annacona, Lord Ross Kempsell, Lord Maxton, Dr. Julia Pascal, the Right Honourable Lord Zach Goldsmith of Richmond Park, Julia Hartley Brewer, Sir William Shawcross, Camilla Tomney, Ian Hersey Ali, the Earl of Leicester, Honourable Dame Diana Johnson, Konstantin Vadimovich Kissin,
author and trigonometry podcaster. It's just a who's who of the network of people that we talk about.
And as I've said before, and I'll say again, I don't want to be seen in a room with a single person that's on this unless by absolute accident I have the opportunity to completely mog them.
Yeah, anyone who has signed the October Declaration has basically signed that they prefer other countries to Britain.
Power,
as is signified by this flag.
Power cannot brook an end.
Yes.
You cannot think that Britain is your imperium whilst also having sympathy for that other is really Imperium. Well, you must choose one over the other. You cannot serve two masters.
We have plucked somebody out of this list. I believe she is on here.
Yes.
I'll get this up in a sec. But this is Bella Wallersteiner.
I must admit has had me blocked on Twitter for years after we went after the Henry Jackson Society.
Yeah, a little Ukraine flag there. But she is somebody who we've been researching in our containment arcs for quite a while. She's somebody who's part of the...
Bright Blue.
Yes, well, she's part of the think tank O-sphere, the top of the O-sphere. But what she did, and she basically used to be a PR person.
Mm.
She was like an accounts and PR kind of person. But... she wrote an article here.
I used to be unequivocally pro-multiculturalism. Yeah. How naive I was. I reckon we'll just get like the first paragraph of this.
We have not created a harmonious melting pot, but a society where prejudices and tensions can fester.
Just one day before the October 7th terrorist attack, I tweeted that conservatives should stop bashing multiculturalism. In the 5 months since, however, it has become clear that Britain is not the success story I naively believed it to be. Extremist ideologies have been celebrated on our streets, minority communities have been targeted, and our failure to confront the root causes of division has become all too apparent.
The nation's silent majority have watched in horror as protests descended into platforms for hate speech again. As posters were vandalized with swastikas and mobs chanted anti-Semitic slogans, often without any understanding of their true meaning. All movements for justice we know are... not all movements for justice we know are inherently just.
Multiculturalism has failed.
Yes.
It's failed to counter extremist ideology. It's failed to uphold shared values such as democracy, human rights, tolerance, and peaceful coexistence. For too long, we believed that embracing diversity without considering how different cultures' belief in rights might collide would deliver harmonious integration and social cohesion. It didn't, and it won't, until we fix the underlying factors which lead some to be radicalised. I will refer you back to a post I made on Twitter ages ago. And it is a simple question to ask. Who in Europe, bar the European populations themselves, would be utmost concerned with losing their position in Western civilization, possibly as a consequence of what they directly have done to it?
That's fine. It's just a page crashed. Well, here she is on the Bright Blue page, which is horrendously formatted, so you can't actually fucking see it, so I'm going to highlight this. But here she's talking about Isabella Wallersteiner breaking the silence, my stand against anti-Semitism. It's very clear that this is a cynical narrative by the leftward wing of the very leftward Tory party, as, well, I believed in multiculturalism until it affected me. Well, and it's, as we'll get into, the only vector you can criticise multiculturalism through is the defence of Israel and the Jewish diaspora.
Mm.
And that's what this is. Isabella Wallersteiner, you know, bring the silence, my stand against anti-Semitism. This is from November 2023. But I don't know, do you want to read any of this?
We'll get to a bit further down, because I think we begin to get an understanding of Miss Bella Wallersteiner herself.
Where's this?
For weeks on end, I've been confronted at these protests with tropes that equate Jews with owning allegiance to international Jewry, corrupting culture, and attempting world domination. For weeks on end, I've tried to engage with protesters at these marches. I've asked difficult questions, challenged their assumptions, and urged them to reconsider the impact of their words and banners. Last weekend, I engaged a mass protester holding a sign which likened the Prime Minister of Israel to a Nazi. Ahistoric and inaccurate signs appropriating the Holocaust and using it against Israel are a disturbing mainstay of these protests.
Oh. Well, sorry, do you want to keep going?
Yes. Often I am asked why I do this. My paternal grandfather was Jewish and came to England from Germany shortly after Kristallnacht. I never met my grandfather, and sadly, I know little about our family history, beyond the fact that 30 of my relatives died in the Holocaust, and my grandfather was once held at knife point by Hitler Youth thugs. She goes on to say the fact that silence is violence here. which is, was that not a leftist divisive slogan?
Violence is violence.
From years ago. But silence is violence. And if you don't speak up for the Jews now, who will speak up for you when it's you on the chopping block?
But we, again, it, we see this very cynical utilization of a narrative to create this one exception, which is Israel and international sentiment of the Jewish diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, you see the, I guess, the slight heel turn here, but it's not a heel turn on immigration in general. It's a heel turn on immigration that may or may not benefit her.
Thank you,
group.
Thank you, Yankee Doodle, in the chat there for your kind words. 30 died. I can't believe 60 of our relatives died. What a shame. RIP to the 120.
Which one, Red Pill, do you want the internal monologue in mass society? People forgetting COVID or forgetting October 7th? Talking to... I would rather be with the Chinese in this, at least they're... No, well, the thing is, they're not.
It's the continuous process of forgetting, I think, that's the...
Belfast Night, I would say that the Chinese lie about that, first of all. Having seen Chinese people in China, they don't have 120 IQ average, I can tell you that much. Just looking at their traffic, I can tell you that. But it is the continuous amnesia that frustrates us, yes. And thank you for the $10 there. We do get... frustrated by the forever forget.
But at both ends, this operation to make conversations in British politics about the Jewish people and about the place of Israel is happening not just at the top for those who read think tanks and read the Telegraph, it's also happening on the middle, and more especially on the bottom rungs, where Tommy Zoginson can run around and once again basically rout everyone in Britain that wants to do ethno-nationalism or some sort of football hooliganist national patriot movement, whatever you want to call this shit. You're all going to end up working for Tommy Zoginson and you're all going to run around with Stars of David.
Here we go again. We just had to have this from Mr. Tommy because it is so cringe.
Yeah.
But this is like the boomer con stuff being funneled into people's eyeballs by this network of people.
And this ginger thing on the right, by the way, is you being a pro-Palestinian, woke-right, Nazi, whatever,
That's you not appreciating our greatest ally.
Yes, Israel is the linchpin of the Western world.
I believe somebody said that.
Yes, I've read book synopsises, multiple of them this year, which have been sold on that premise.
Well... the big thing that tipped towards this was the Tory leadership election, or really, as we are thinking of it, the Shabbos Goy competition.
Yes.
First of all, we had based Kemi Bandanok, who put out an article in the Telegraph, which we won't be reading because it is long and boring and really just contains these little bits with a lot of waffle around them. Immigrants who see Israel as enemy not welcome in the UK, says Kemi Bandanok. Kemi Bandanok has warned that immigrants who see Israel as an enemy are not welcome. Tory leadership hopeful responded to backlash from a Telegraph column which suggested those moving to Britain should be expected to uphold British traditions and values like defending Israel.
Well, of course.
Yes.
Missing children's posters being ripped down because people hate Israel. I don't think that has any place here, she told Sky's Trevor Phillips. However, she insists her comments don't blanket the Muslim immigrant population, and she's met many Muslims who love Israel.
But her Telegraph article was saying that we can only defend Britain's borders and talk about multiculturalism being a failure. Again, with the previous article, it is the same narrative that this can only be seen through a Jewish lens.
Or shall we say the only room within which the conversation can be had is a kosher one.
Yes, there is only a kosher conversation that can take place about immigration in Britain. We then had Robert Jenrick, another hopeful for the leadership, trying to one-up Kemi Bandanok in his salute of Israel. He went as far as to say, Robert Jenrick says, Star of David should be displayed at every point of entry to the UK. Tory leadership frontrunner addressed Conservative Friends of Israel event in hoodie emblazoned with words Hamas are terrorists. But again, I don't think we have too much more to add.
No, I think the only thing that Robert Jenrick could do to improve his chances in the Tory leadership race would come out tomorrow in the Times and have some gushing piece about, I had a late-stage circumcision in life, and here's how you can have one too.
Well, we also have here, once again, Mr. Brandon O'Neill. Let me just get rid of all.
Well, yes, this is the thing that both Brendan O'Neill and I believe one GB News is Charlie Peters, who seems to have spent a good bit of his time in Tel Aviv anyway.
Yes.
Telling us that, well, really, Robert Jenrick was just saying that people who are from Israel should get an automatic entry into Britain through their passports because they're a major Western nation, just like Germany and France and America and all these other countries. And this was actually really a really reasonable suggestion. And that Jenrick just did this because he's a reasonable man. And that there's no way that he would be influenced, or believe that he would have to engage with the Jewish community in such a sycophantic manner for any reason. This is just anti-Semitic critics creating a conspiracy theory around what he's saying.
Here's the Jewish Chronicle, and we found that actually, in terms of sources, I must take my kippa off to the Jewish press.
The world's oldest Jewish newspaper since 1841, so it's the world's oldest newspaper.
I must say that Times of Israel, Hertz, and the Jewish Chronicle all get featured here for very good factual reporting.
Yes.
Torah leadership frontrunners have strong links to Israel and Jews. Ongoing Security Minister Tom Tugendhat and former Immigration Minister Robert Jenrick lead the pack. Shall we go through this? Because there's, yes.
In an article published in...
Tugendhat, whose paternal grandfather was a Jewish emigre from Vienna, who later converted to Catholicism, was a staunch ally of Israel and an enemy of the jihadist regime in Iran throughout his time in office.
In an article published in 2020, Tugendhat, whose name in German means has virtue, wrote of his abhorrence of anti-Semitism and his visit to Yad Vashem, stating that his connection to a history of European Jewish culture makes me so conscious of the words that normalise hatred and try to turn me into an outsider in my own home. While he had no Jewish upbringing, he commented that the same was true of Jews murdered in the Holocaust. Many of those victims never thought of themselves as Jews, but their murderers felt otherwise. And then they will mention in here, yeah, of course, that Jenrick, I believe, is married to a Jewish woman and is raising two or three children.
Here we go. Braverman, whose husband is Jewish.
Yes.
And who famously described the anti-Israel protests that have roiled British cities since the October 7th terrorist attacks as hate marches, and Bandanok, who did her utmost to forge closer trade links with Israel and also a staunch, dependable allies of the Jewish state and Britain's Jewish community. She's the one who previously said that we need to shut down multiculturalism, but only because of the Israeli angle.
Oh, because Hamas is threatening the liberties we once had.
What I'll try and find here. Yes. Former Solicitor Jenrick, 42, beat widespread expectations he would lose his seat in Newark, blah, blah, blah.
There you go. Yeah. Scoring a majority of 3,572 over Labour, a prominent figure in the Conservative Friends of Israel, he's married to Michal Brechner, the daughter of Holocaust survivors, and the couple have brought up their three children as Jews.
Ah, so that's why he wants a Star of David at the Jewish border.
No, that's just a common British value.
as Braverman and Bandanok will tell us, that is just a British value, yes. In 2020, he made a speech saying Britain should build a new embassy on a plot of land it owns in Jerusalem and close the existing embassy in Aviv. But yes, it seems... It's just that, I'm not quite sure you can say that he's an impartial hand when it comes to this conflict, eh? And I'm not quite sure you can say that he was merely saying something he wasn't saying when he said that they should display the Star of David at every British entry point. But I digress. There's another quick one here just called Rishi Reshuffle, the Jewish Movers and Shakers in Sunak's New Government. I believe the one I picked out here was...
Dominic Raab.
Was Dominic Raab, yes. What is it?
Raab is the son of a Czech Jewish refugee who arrived in the UK in 1938 at the age of six after fleeing the Nazis. His family decided to flee because the Munich Agreement gave the Sudeten Land, part of Czechoslovakia, to Nazi Germany. His father died when Raab was 12 years old.
Remember, this is 0.5% of the population.
Yeah, the two paragraphs down, yes. Again, there you go. Raab told the JC, this would be Jewish Chronicle, I presume, in 2020, of his pride at his family's Jewish ancestry. He had stories of the family's ordeal in Eastern Europe from his grandmother, who lived to a ripe old age and lived close to his family home. dad really spoke about his past and where he came from. Part of that was horror. Part of that was that he was a classic assimilated Jewish man. Just like Frank Ferretti.
And here we have a quick one from Declassified UK here. Conservative lobby funded a third of conservative... Israeli lobby funded a third of conservative MPs. Why won't this zoom in and out there? Sorry, I'm having some zoom trouble in this bit. Doesn't seem to want to play ball.
No.
But anyway, exclusive. Tory politicians have accepted over 430,000 from Israeli lobby groups and made 187 trips to the country. This seems... I don't know about you, but... that seems like a lot.
Excuse me, we've got Russian subversion to worry about.
It's just a third of all Conservative MPs funded by the lobby of a single country who we supply arms to and who the front runners of the Conservative race have both family and genetic links to. How odd. Now we're just paranoid. We just won't shut up about it. We're the ones bringing it up. We're the ones poisoning the well.
Yep.
But that's just, again, it's not something that's talked about, but there it is. There is the overview of why this has become a slobbering contest, why this has become the Shabaskoy Olympics, because the people involved are financially and personally motivated to serve a country that is not Britain. And that is the long and short of it. We'll have a quick look at the based, what is the based media saying about this? Well, here's the people who now own The Spectator. The people who now own basically all of the visible right-wing media in Britain, GB News, and of course, Unheard. Here is Unheard. Why Israel deserves our support. The West must stand up to Islamism. I hate the Unheard's formatting, by the way.
Just give me the last paragraph here for this one. Because we all know who Ayaan Hirsi Ali is by now. We've all regretfully watched enough Joe Rogan fucking Jordan Peterson shit. There you go. Today, a year on from Hamas's heinous attack on Israel, we should welcome Israel's war against Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, and most importantly, against Iran. Yet Israel must also learn from America's mistakes. Remember that the war isn't over until the ideology of the Muslim Brotherhood is destroyed. For that to happen, we must first recognize our enemy in our midst, and that begins by naming it.
Huh.
But that right there... is her completely stepping out of the liberal frame and essentially leaving an open-ended suggestion that, well, we must kill enough Muslims and create enough terror in the Middle East until Islam as an idea no longer exists. Now...
Well, political Islam as an idea. That's the caveat. Really what this is the premise of the war on terror.
Mm.
This is just the war on terror again. Oh, look, it's the war on terror again. Well, welcome to 2004. We have cycled back round. Please enjoy your new...
But we've also got one that we have covered before from our favourite recovering...
favourite recovering lesbian communist, Mary Harrington. Yes.
This was from October last year, I believe.
Yes.
When the crowd bellows from the river to the sea.
I'll quickly announce... Well, we've read this one before, but I'd like to read this again. This is Mary Harrington's salute to the American Empire.
Yes.
And the article is just called Israelis' Enemies Are Blinded by the Sins of America. Pro-Palestinian leftists offer no better alternative.
There we go. Then relatively few are saying this because they have a material interest in obliterating the real Israel. I dare say many more have no particular animus towards Jewish people. They just don't care about them. Rather, most are moved by a desire to weaken what Israel symbolises. Pax Americana. Whenever the denizens of a greater Corbynism denounce settler colonialism, capitalism, white supremacy, or some other formulation meaning the reigning order, which I don't like, this is what they're referring to. A defeat for Israel is a defeat for America, and implicitly, a great many Jews may be sacrificed in pursuit of that noble goal. By contrast, there's no obvious way to turn the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict into a bloody nose for the American Empire, so no one gives a stuff. I think that's quite an important point, though. Cover there.
Yeah.
Which is, much like some of the American commentators, they seem to be a suggestion that Jewish settler colonies were just like the Americans that came on the Mayflower.
The pioneers.
Yes.
They're civilizing an uncivilized place.
But yeah, I think it's probably just a bottom paragraph you'd be wanting from here.
Yeah, well, sorry. I'll do both of them. In fact, they're both a bit, again, jaw-dropping. Mary Harrington, supposed ally, we're supposed to make nice with this person. But only a fool would take these bleak realities as a license to equivocate about the conflict now unfolding. Both sizing is itself a peacetime luxury made possible by Pax Americana. The American Empire may be immoral, extractive, asymmetrical, and at all times infuriatingly hypocritical, but every empire throughout history has had feet of clay as well as high ideals. And with all its faults, America remains the principal guarantor of relative peace and order across a colossal sphere of influence that spans half the planet and includes my own nation. Yes, make us a vassal, America. Make us a vassal. Just today, Biden will step up to that project again with a visit to Tel Aviv. Do we want him to succeed or not? Those who dream of America's downfall, literally or by symbolic proxy, offer no better alternative, and a great many worse ones. In reality, there are no blank slate beginnings and no happy endings either. We can only ever pick a place and take a stand. I stand with peace and order, however flawed. I stand with Israel. Your based press, and we'll keep reading that every time somebody brings up Mary fucking Harrington.
Thank you, Kent alumni.
Thank you, Kent alumni, very Ferretti.
But fundamentally, this keeps us all stuck in a dialectical trap.
Yes.
There are issues that we cannot talk about. And there are issues that we can only talk about in reference to Judaism and the nation of Israel. So we can only really deal with anti-colonialism when anti-colonialism threatens the Jewish state. We can only really deal with anti or too aggressive civil rights policy when it threatens the position that Jews hold in Europe or in America. So we're kind of left with no ability to come out of these things, especially when genuine and possibly even sometimes well-reasoned criticism of Zionism or of Israel, which in and of itself is a waste of time anyway, because talking about these people isn't going to really do much about it.
No.
But still, for a second, let's say that is useful, then it's no wonder that you've got a Nick Fuentes or a numerous other subset of characters who are brown, ugly, foreign, smelly hippies. And these are the people that now make anti-Zionism or Israel lobby criticism untenable and socially unacceptable because they themselves are unacceptable people, and therefore they have the ability to turn otherwise acceptable ideas into unacceptable ideas.
The reverse of that as well is that there is this large temptation by people who consider themselves political realists to attach a British anti-immigrant and a nominally nationalist message to a louder Zionist message, that they think that being the junior partner of any elite coalition, or at least from their point of view, a junior partner, they really won't be a partner at all. But in from the argument is that closing the borders and possibly even deportations being discussed is better than it being not discussed. So we should all shut up, get in line and ignore who it's coming from, because at least it's coming from somewhere. And their argument is that we shouldn't list look a gift horse.
But the Overton window is shifting.
Yeah.
That's why Candace Owens is debating Rabbi Shmuley on Piers Morgan. You can't recognise that something like that happening means that your ideas, the conversations that you're having, have been completely defanged and de-weaponized, and I have nothing else to tell you.
This cycle happened during the War on Terror, in quotes. It's also happened multiple times since. It happened, as I'll go into in a second, very quickly, it also happened during the refugee crisis in Syria. What will the result be of, quote-unquote, attempting to red-pill people on immigration via Zionism? Well, more money will go to Israel and its internationalist NGOs. And the internationalist NGOs that it directly funds. They give that money to migrant organizations, so Gaza deportations can also involve moving populations to Europe. It's very important to recognize that the displacement into Lebanon was part of the Israeli plan for emptying Gaza and the other parts of Israel of Arabs back in the 1940s, which then overwhelmed a Christian Lebanon, which has led to the borderline failed state we see today.
And then they'll just push these people out into another state,
yes,
and another state, and another state. And before we know it, King's Cross London will be Israel's buffer zone.
Well, yes. it's Israel's plank.
Yes.
And as we saw with the Syrian organization, in quotes, we'll be getting LGBT under-18s and Christians from Gaza.
All the vulnerable refugees.
We're getting all the vulnerable refugees. This is exactly the same, an exact repeat of what happened with the Syria conflict that Israel was itself escalating.
And of course, at that time, what did they do? They kept the borders shut because they weren't taking them.
As Europe takes in migrants, Israel tries to keep them out, while EU struggles to handle the influx. Israel has begun grappling with the issue. Israel has been grappling with the issue for nearly a decade. This is from September 2015.
But what was happening in Germany, where these people were arriving in Europe, however?
Well, what you get here also is, in Germany, Jewish funds, this is 2019, help keep Mediterranean migrant rescue missions afloat. As thousands flee Africa on flimsy boats, just one ship operates in the area between Libya and Italy. A Jewish aid group is partnering with others to help operators. And again, with world watching refugees, Jewish coalition sees chance to boost aid. Long hampered by lack of funds, international Jewish relief organizations help to draw empathy and donations for new programs in Europe. And if you look at who is in charge of this supposedly multi-faith effort to create, you know, the Multi-Faith Alliance on Syrian Refugees, Dr. Georgette Bennett, she's an inductee into the Manhattan Jewish
Hall of Fame.
2020 Manhattan Jewish Hall of Fame inductee.
In 2013, Bennett founded the Multi-Faith Alliance for Syrian Refugees, which has worked to raise awareness and mobilize more than $170 million. Well, maybe that woman was right. These people have more money, better networks, and they can manifest and mobilize a process.
Wait a minute,
better.
What was that popped up there? Sorry, goddammit, come back. The moment the world stood still, it was an October 7th message, and I closed it like an idiot. But here's a panel, I believe.
From the Weizmann National Museum of American Jewish History.
Never forget the American Jewish response to the refugee crisis. Thursday, this is from 2022. But we have here Anne-Marie Gray, the executive director of UN... HCR during this period, as in the person, the UN refugee agency, who was helping fire hose these migrants into Europe. We have Sloane Davidson, the founder and CEO of Hello Neighbor. Well, who is Sloane Davidson? God damn it, where is it? There we go. Stronger Together. Where's the bit? Sorry. I've never been prouder to be from Squirrel Hill.
Or to be Jewish. I may be other things too. And that's the great thing about democracy in our country. I can baptize my sons in a church and go to the children's service at a synagogue and eat at an iftar during Ramadan. I can celebrate a Hindu baby naming ceremony and get henna with a bride and bridesmaid to celebrate a Sikh wedding. Hopefully a cup full of Pakistani acid over the face.
And I can go home to Israel with my Israeli passport and have a country that serves my ethnic religion.
Oh, God. With the line above, though. They will not divide us, for we are stronger than hate, and we are stronger together. White, black, brown, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, city, suburban, rural.
We see the diaspora rhetoric meets the at-home rhetoric.
Yes. But these people, it's almost like it's agitation at home and integration amongst the goyim.
Jewish refugee groups condemn illegal migration bill and government language exclusive.
The Wiener Holocaust Library.
And the Association of Jewish Refugees urged governments to show cash. And this was during the Stop the Boats debates. One out of every five Jews in the world is a migrant, more than any other religious group. A Pew study has found that 20% of the world's Jews are migrants.
New York, the wandering Jew is alive and well.
I thought you'd spot that was gonna be, I wish I could write for her. Again, Jewish press.
I want to write for Haaretz. Yeah. I'll write for the Jewish Chronicle.
Make America Great Again. Why immigration matters for the US Jewish voters this November. America's Jewish community has long been associated with immigration advocacy. Now, pro-immigration Jewish activists are calling on community leaders to take a stronger stand while pushing back against GOP misinformation and fear-mongering ahead of November's presidential election. Here is a Israel, a guide for activists.
Page 53.
Yes. By the ADL. This is from 2012, a publication of the Anti-Defamation League. This passage is quite famous, but it is... It is one that most people find relatively jaw-dropping. So let me add them. I want it. 50. Yes, here we go.
Do you want to start there? The State of Israel was established as a Jewish state out of nationalist aspirations for the Jewish people and an international recognition of the rights of Jews to a homeland following millennia of persecution. It is unrealistic and unacceptable to expect Israel to voluntarily subvert its own sovereign existence and nationalist identity. Israel is a self-declared Jewish state with founding principles that guarantee the equal treatment and protection of all its citizens, regardless of religion, ethnicity, or colour.
What a balance of a statement there. What a tightrope. But this is the rhetoric. When you talk about immigration at home versus immigration abroad, this is the fallback position. And the ADL is supposed to be an internationalist outfit. They have condemned refugee bans from all places. They are nominally a pro-refugee organisation for the West.
Can we get the kicker here as well, though? Binationalism requires Israel to forsake its Jewish nationalism and identity, along with its status as a refuge for Jews fleeing persecution. Furthermore, binationalism is unworkable given current realities and historic animosities. With the high birth rate among the Palestinians, along with a return by Palestinian refugees and their descendants now living around the world, Jews would be a minority within a binational state, thus likely ending any semblance of equal representation and protections. But why doesn't that apply to white homelands? Of course, we all fucking know why. Because we are not the Schmittian exception, are we?
No. And this is pure Israel as the Schmittian exception. Here is more Israel as the Schmittian exception. Israel knows how powerful the NGOs it uses to warp other countries' politics are. And so Israel has passed a bill to make NGOs that take a majority foreign money register as foreign agents. This was uncontroversial. But the same law, the exact same law in Georgia that attempts to map the influence of Western NGOs is condemned by the Council on Foreign Relations.
Because it would identify groups for possibly being primarily and fundamentally funded by Jews?
Yes, possibly. Hmm. or at least by America or Israel or anywhere that funds these kinds of NGOs, but they understand that they cannot have at home what they advocate for abroad.
Yes, because, of course.
And this is extremely provable. We have not used any source, I think, that anyone anywhere would disagree with. Everything that we are talking about here is acknowledged within the current narrative of the new cycle and the historic narrative of what is going on. These are the acknowledged realities of what is happening within the news cycle and within the wider narrative itself. We are not straying from the path. We are merely combining parts of it you are not supposed to look at. All of these are quote-unquote mainstream sources. They are not places that will fail a fact check, in quotes.
I mean, this is the Council for Foreign Relations. It's the Council for Foreign Relations. Here.
And this is just dry commentary on a law from that exists.
From the new Israel Fund.
Yes. But this shows you really how they operate as the Schmittian exception, because what they do, quite simply, is allowed. And that is how it works. There is no such thing as international law. There is simply people who are in power and people are not. And the last thing I want to bring up, really, is the final settlement of this. We see coming at the end of all this is, we have this conflict between the internationalists and the ultra-Zionists, where the differences stop, where the flooding of Europe with unlimited brown people begins. The nationalists get to empty their new lands, and the internationalists wave never-again banners to conveniently have a place to put all these displaced people. Under the pretense of protection from Israel and its war crimes, no less, you have to admire the grift if it wasn't your nation in the crosshairs. But I think the final resolution to this and the turbocharging of an international migrant market for Palestinians will be a third party, be it the UN, be it some conglomeration of NGOs, be it even the Blair Institute itself, which would be quite a coup, but I doubt they'd do it under their own banner. It will probably be some kind of UN thing. But Blair is signalling where it's going. Bring in third party to end war in Gaza. Former British leader supports Israel's self-defence, but
create the illusion of impartiality and the destruction of...
Create another mandate.
Well, no, you just destroy Lebanon. You say it was impartial. Well, the AI told us to destroy Lebanon for the sake of Israel, so we did it.
I think we've missed one here from Wablu. Thank you for the $5. Have you heard of Gavin Bobby? He would be very good to have on the Collapse Watch stream. I've not heard of... Who is Gavin?
Gavin Bobby is the guy who goes around protesting the setting up of mosques in local areas and trying to get the local county councils and stuff to basically stop them entirely. I've not looked really deeply into his work, but as far as I'm aware, he has had some success on it, and he also doesn't like Tommy Robinson, so...
I mean, fair enough.
I don't know. People, I don't know. We tend not to do guest stuff so much, I think, because
we tend to do a bit more of it.
But we generally tried to go for folk, I think, that are more on our level and less. But see, for example, if I sat and looked at that Gavin Bobby stuff for a couple hours and there was something interesting to it, yeah, we might get him on in future, but we shall see. Otherwise, I don't think there's really much else to add.
No, I think we've gone to all the angles here, really.
If you haven't, I would recommend that you go and see our Quantum Small Hat stream, and also go and look at Woke in a Post-Woke World, because I'm always...
Well, anti-woke in a post-woke world.
Anti-woke in a post-woke world, because I'm slightly concerned that so much of what we said back then has possibly come true in so many much worse forms.
If anything, we were a bit white-pilled on that. But thank you to everyone who donated. Thank you to everybody who tuned in. Do remember to interact with the videos. Do dance to Al Gore's rhythm.
Yes.
Like I said, if you do want to support us, we have the Ko-fi, we have the Anti-Politics Substack,
I think most
and
importantly,
the monetization tools on YouTube as well.
Most importantly for this stream,
yes.
Please, in the chat, please give a like. I don't know, hit the bell.
Yes.
Favorite, reblog, repost. And also, just show your love for Israel in the comments.
Yes.
You know, maybe one day we'll migrate to the wall.
Maybe one day. But until then, I will say have a good evening and good night from us.
Go to the pub and also get the World Grand Prix on. Let us play in 15 minutes.